This is a WUSF News Florida Matters special report. Governor Rick Scott's State of the State Address to kick off the 2016 Florida legislative session. I'm Kirsten Cooper in Tampa. Lawmakers will spend the next 60 days trying to hammer out a new balanced budget and deal with a number of issues from disabled Floridians and water policy to gambling, health care, and guns, and many other issues. This will be Governor Scott's sixth State of the State Address, the second of his second term. And joining me here in Tampa is University of South Florida political science professor Dr. Susan McManus. Great to see you.
Good morning.
You know, the governor is scheduled to speak at 11, and that just absolutely never happens. And in these few minutes before the address, it could be 20 minutes from now, it could be 5 minutes from now. We'd love to hear from our listeners with comments. We've got our Twitter open now, Twitter at WUSF, if you have a question for Dr. McManus. So let's talk about some of the lawmakers, the key players in this year's session. Of course, that would be House Speaker Steve Crisafulli and Senate President Andy Gardner. This is Crisafulli's last session.
Right, it is. And of course, it looks like heading into this session that there are going to be high priorities for passing legislation that's favored by the House Speaker as well as the Senate President. And there's been much said about trying to have a more amiable legislative session. It is an election year.
Yes.
And Floridians were very upset about the lack of getting along in Tallahassee last time out, the inability to pass the budget on time, the mess with redistricting. And it is an election year, and let me tell you, the Republicans know they have a repair job to do in terms of their imagery in the state.
They want to get out of this session on day 60. They want to get out of there because that frees them up to campaign and raise money for the upcoming elections. So Crisafulli, in his last session, he has promised to pass a major water policy bill and pass it early. This is something that he has really set as a priority.
And it's a priority that was reflected in the USF Nielsen survey. Water was the number one issue mentioned by Floridians across the state. It's also one that can be quite divisive if it's not well designed to benefit water problems in all parts of the state. It cannot just be concentrated in one part. It used to be if you talked about the Everglades, that was enough to get water policy through. No longer so. Springs, pollution, a wide range of water issues are on Floridians' minds.
And Senate President Andy Gardner also wrapping up his last year in office. Gardner wants fast action on helping Floridians with disabilities, a topic that he certainly comes by honestly as the parent of a son with Down syndrome.
Absolutely. And the disabled voters, as well as disabled students, disabled people at all levels are a point of attention, not just because it's an election year, but because it's a personal thing. And when you see disabilities in your own family, you become much more attentive. I was the daughter of a woman who was blind. My mom was blind. And you become a lot more attentive. And I think this time out, you're going to see a lot more receptivity to it because there's going to be less fractiousness within the Senate. And that's very important.
We're watching live coverage. We're waiting for the governor to approach the dais there as the State of the State Address. I see him making his way through the crowd now in the House chamber in Tallahassee. In the meantime, other major players in Tallahassee, Land O'Lakes Republican Richard Corcoran, he chairs the House Appropriations Committee, a pretty important job there in the House, and he is set to be House Speaker this coming November.
Of course, and he wants to start out on the right foot. He's been mentioned by many, many outlets as being one of the most powerful to-be speakers in years, already amassed a lot of support. But at the same time, he's an unknown in terms of how he'll perform as speaker. But absolutely, the speaker's gavel wields loads of power no matter who has it.
Bradenton Senator Bill Galvano was one of the key players in redrawing Florida's political maps last year. I don't know if that works for him or against him, but he is on track to be Senate President in a few years, in 2019, I believe. And one of his main jobs during this session will be to help figure out how to deal with Governor Scott's Seminole Gambling Compact.
And what a controversial issue that's going to be. On the face of it, you know, the USF Nielsen survey showed a lot of support for having the Seminoles have everything, which would suggest a lot of people in favor of the governor's proposal that he's already signed an agreement with but has to be approved by the legislature. But on the other hand, almost half of our respondents also said they didn't like gambling at all. So this is a tough issue. Moral issues are always tough in an election year. And on top of that, you got big bucks. And on top of that, the Seminoles have become very effective lobbyists and campaign contributors.
I saw one interesting survey that was conducted recently that said Floridians typically like the choices that this compact brings, but they don't want expanded gambling. I was trying to reconcile those two because it seems like that does, in a way, expand gambling in Florida.
I think it's a recognition that gambling goes on, and they look at what's happening in a lot of other states and having more choice at the existing facilities like the Seminole facilities and the pari-mutuels that do exist seems okay, but that's the end of the road because a lot of people do worry about Florida becoming a Nevada, becoming a gambling state when tourism, family tourism, is such a premier part of the state's economy.
Mm-hmm. Brandon, Senator Tom Lee heads up the Senate Appropriations Committee, and he's already said, he said this, I think back in September, the state cannot swing a $1 billion tax cut package. He's also not convinced that Enterprise Florida needs $250 million. Saying economic incentives to lure companies to Florida sort of lose their effectiveness over time. So he's going to be running interference with this tax cut proposal.
All right. And it is true that every governor from beginning to end always asks for twice as much as they want in a budget in hopes that they'll get exactly what they need. So there's some of that going on, and there's uncertainties about the economic forecast. That has to be done several times before the budget's actually passed. And so it is a contentious issue. But going again to surveys, USF Nielsen survey shows that Floridians overwhelmingly regard incentives for businesses, which, of course, Enterprise Florida is a premier economic development agency. They regard that as not corporate welfare, but absolutely as a job creator. The key to the governor's proposal is going to be that he is actually trying to tie the receipt of economic development funds to actual performance. And that would help a lot, but it's something that has to get a lot of promotion because the average person doesn't really follow this in detail.
This is Tampa Senator Arthenia Joyner's last year in office, too. She's being forced out by term limits, and she is a self-proclaimed hardcore Democrat, old-school Democrat, but she seems to get along really great with Republicans. Andy Gardner said last year, I think, that Joyner was fun to hang out with and incredibly smart. And one of her victories last year, which is, I guess, a little difficult being in the Democratic Party in Tallahassee, but her victory was to file that lawsuit that declared the House's decision to end the session early and abruptly was unconstitutional, and the Supreme Court agreed.
No question about it. Arthenia Joyner is a fighter, very smart, represented Tampa very well, and is the best spokesperson for the Democratic Party agenda, and she's unrelenting. And it's very important, even though Democrats don't make up a majority of the legislature and probably won't pass a lot of their legislation, it's still important that in an election year that she's able to articulate the Democratic viewpoint so that when it comes time to do the campaigning on the campaign trail, Democrats can say, look, my party did this, the other did that. It's critical, and she is an excellent spokesperson and has a great pulse, feeling of the pulse of Democrats in Florida.
You're listening to live coverage of Governor Scott's State of the State Address on WUSF 89.7 to kick off the 2016 Florida legislative session. We will cut away to the state capitol as soon as the governor approaches that microphone. He is, I'm looking at the video now, he's slowly making his way through the crowd there, shaking hands, chatting, and looks like he's posing for selfies there. So in the meantime, we are joined by USF political science professor Susan McManus, and we are inviting you to weigh in via Twitter. We are at WUSF. After the governor's response, by the way, or his address, we will hear the Democratic response from the House and Senate minority leaders. That would be Tampa Democratic Senator Arthenia Joyner and West Palm Beach Representative Mark Pafford. So, Dr. McManus, you helped develop the Sunshine State survey released by the USF School of Public Affairs. And the number one issue among Floridians is?
The economy. And we'll see whether that's the case once we get into a national election cycle. But it looks like it's going to be. And in fact, one of the unusual aspects of this next year's, or this year's now, presidential election is that two fears are coexisting. The fear of people's economic security and future, and fear for their own personal safety, whether it's terrorism or whether it's also just these mass shootings. And we did see, of course, guns arising as a big issue, and it's going to come back. That's going to be a big issue in the legislature. But without question, Florida is the best microcosm of the country, the nation's best swing state, closest swing state. Everything that happens in this session will be parsed by both parties and the presidential candidates as they look at Florida.
It's so interesting. It seems like every presidential election year, you know, there's always other issues floating around, but it always seems to come down to the economy. It's always the pocketbook issue. But this year kind of seems a little unusual with the terrorism threat. Security is way up there, but is the gun issue in Florida, is that sort of a way that terrorism issue is manifesting itself in Florida politics?
Somewhat, but of course it's also just the national coverage and incidents of here of people in Florida being connected in one way or another, either whether legitimately or just suggested to be tied in with these cells or whatever. But guns is a big issue, and it's a very divided issue. The nation's divided on it by party lines, without question. One group refers to it as gun control. The other refers to it as gun safety or gun control or gun safety. The other refers to it as freedom and the Second Amendment. But it clearly has party ties to the viewpoints. And, of course, this legislative session has to deal with two big issues: carrying concealed weapons on campuses, and secondly, there's even been a bill, I believe, filed that calls for open carry laws, just as we've seen recently implemented in Texas and in place in a lot of other states.
Yeah, we'll talk about more in a moment if we get the chance to. That's the Gates family, I think. Matt and Don are sponsoring that legislation. Number two on the Sunshine State survey is K-12 education.
You know, education, Carson, is absolutely a preeminent part of any election that has a statewide side to it, which, of course, the presidential race does. It's one of the biggest items in the state budget. It's one that touches everybody from the business community to parents to college students to nonprofits. Education affects everyone, and there are a lot of players in the education policymaking arena in Tallahassee, lots of lobbyists involved on every aspect of it. It's just a huge big-ticket item, and of course it's a key part of what the governor is going to propose. His proposed budget allocates more to education than has been in the past per pupil, and really he's emphasizing, it's interesting to the USF community, the college communities more than in the past.
Yeah. We are inviting listeners to weigh in on Twitter at WUSF. RLTerry1 tweets, Dr. McManus, I'm looking for Scott to touch on the vacuum of entertainment media jobs in Florida. Florida is losing creative young people.
That is true, and that is a concern of the business community. And, of course, the film industry, there's been a lot of anxiety about loss of money from the state for granting, incentives to filming companies to come in Florida, and that's a big part of creative communications. And in general, we're worried about the brain drain out of Florida. This is a big state. We have many, many colleges and universities, and the last thing the state really needs is to see a huge loss of investment in these students who study here.
Now, I found this kind of interesting on the Sunshine State survey. You found that Floridians seem to be a little more concerned these days about traffic and transportation than they were in previous years.
Guess why? Because we're growing again. You know, people are really not so concerned about that when the economy is bad and people are exiting Florida and we can't attract visitors. But let me tell you, the economy's spinning right now. The issue and the challenge for legislators and even congressional and presidential candidates is that the middle class Floridian, particularly the blue collar worker, just is not convinced of all this economic recovery.
And speaking of transportation, TPA Natives Show tweets us to say, rail, light rail, any kind of rail, Plant and Flagler, put us on the map. Why can't we continue in that tradition?
A lot of it has to do, of course, it's a huge issue for mayors, for governors, for county commissions. Everyone realizes that with growth does come traffic and congestion. And they point to other burgeoning Sunbelt states like North Carolina as having successfully tackled some of these rail issues, but Floridians continue to vote against it. And that is a real challenge here. How do you convince people to vote for higher taxes to support rail? Because you have the classic problem of, well, if I don't use it, I ain't paying for it kind of attitude.
Which doomed it in Hillsborough County several years ago.
And it's a hard sell when people still are convinced. Keep in mind that middle class voter is still not convinced that their economic security is strongly in place. They're still a little apprehensive. And then the ups and downs of the market and all the things that they're seeing. So if it doesn't, if someone wants to propose higher taxes and it's not personally benefiting them, they tend to vote no. It's really the most difficult policy issue to get a vote through in Florida right now.
I'm Carson Cooper speaking with USF political science professor Dr. Susan McManus. I love this about your 2014 survey. It revealed that when it came to job approval of elected officials, the federal government scored the lowest. State government was in the middle, and local government got the highest marks. I wonder if that's changed.
That is classic textbook. You pick up any textbook in American politics, and that's always the way it is. People dislike the federal government, don't know much about the state government, and like the local better than the other two. Why? Because it's closest to them. They can react, and they can call somebody, or they run into an elected official in the grocery store, at church, or at school. It's much easier to get in touch with local people. The same reason that people like local media more than they like national media, because it's more personalized.
Well, as we wait for Governor Scott to deliver his State of the State address live from Tallahassee, let's talk a bit about some of the issues facing lawmakers. Of course, the budget is the only thing they must address by law, a balanced budget. Governor Scott says the state will have a budget surplus of $1.6 billion. The legislature says it's more like $635 million, which is a pretty big difference.
Absolutely. And never the twain shall meet, I can assure you. This is why no matter, even if a governor's party controls the legislature, governors have a tough time getting their budget through 100% as they propose it. And there's always a tussle over the money. In this case, the big gap is a product of something called recurring revenues. Mm-hmm. And the legislature is saying that not enough of this money is recurring, over the percentage, that you can't do much about cutting out recurring revenues that are required either a grant or tied to a tax or whatever. And so then that's really the controversy, is over the percentage of the budget that's recurring versus not recurring.
You know, I wonder, though, with lawmakers dying to end this session on time, what with an election year, does this give Scott some extra leverage when it comes to his budget versus what they may want?
Probably, because they absolutely want to adjourn on time. You saw that in most of the pre-session comments by the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate. We don't want another meltdown. And it's why they've already started early. And it's probably true that when they start looking at surveys and whatever and finding out what people think about the economy, that it's still going to be a big issue, and they're going to want to still focus on jobs. It's the thing that really saves the governor is that the public agrees that jobs are an important aspect of the economy and an important task of a governor to do.
And to that end, jobs and the economy, Governor Scott says $1 billion in tax cuts, that tax cut package, is a must to grow the state's economy. He is really into this. I mean, have you seen the TV ads yet?
Oh, absolutely, the TV ads. And then I understand he's meeting with a bunch of mayors from across the state this afternoon to really pump his economic development ideas and get their input, because they'll be a key part of the local sell of the idea. But it's also true is that must have means that you just have to win a sizable portion of it. I can assure you that the governor is willing to compromise a bit on the amount going to this if other things can take place and the legislature can adjourn without a huge fractiousness and on time.
Well, the governor wants specifically a 5.5% corporate income. He wants to get rid of that corporate income tax altogether, 5.5%. He wants to get rid of forever the sales tax on manufacturing equipment, get rid of the sales tax on commercial leases, Republicans in the legislature, of course, generally like tax cuts, but they're not convinced that these will do much for average Floridians. They're all aimed at businesses.
Even though we've seen a couple of Democratic legislators like the idea of cutting the tax on manufacturing, thinking that it will help their areas, parts of the state where there is sort of a small core of manufacturing. So, you know, it can cut across party lines, depending upon who feels that they benefit or their constituents. But you failed to mention one that would be of great interest to USF students, and is the fact that he wanted to permanently get rid of the sales tax on college textbooks.
Yeah, I was going to mention that one. And then there's the sales tax holidays.
Oh, yes.
They're always popular. One would be aimed at storm preparedness, and the other back-to-school shoppers. This late this summer.
Right. And, you know, one of the advantages to having the session so early is that it does give time for things to be addressed. If they make a mess of it, hopefully they could at least not come back into special session, but adjust things. But there's motive to get it right now, because each of these legislators, if they're running for re-election, some of them are termed out. They know they're on the campaign trail as soon as this session's over. And if things have just fallen apart, it sticks to all of them. And it reinforces a real problem among Floridians anyway, which is distrust of politicians in general, starting with Washington and last session sort of sticking a bit to state legislators.
We're on Twitter at WUSF. Sarah C. tweets, I am a college student and I'm leaving when I graduate so I can go pay higher taxes to get better services such as public transits.
And for the young people, and this is so critical, Carson, and it's something that we're doing a lot of research here personally, I am, on the millennial voters. Younger voters are already expressing major differences in their willingness to pay taxes, but where they want to live. They want to live in urban areas where there is transit and everything's within walkable distance. The millennial generation, unknowns to a lot of people, is now larger than the baby boomers, which heretofore has been one of the largest generations in American history. The young people are really changing politics, and as more and more of them get elected to local and state offices, I have three of my former students right now serving in the legislature, things will change.
Last year, Governor Scott wanted $700 million in tax cuts. Lawmakers, as I recall, gave him about half that. So
typical, as we said earlier, ask for more than what you want in hopes that you'll get what you need.
Last year's State of the State address, by the way, lasted about 24 minutes. It is a packed chamber, as you might imagine. Senate President Andy Gardner in there, House Speaker Steve Crisafulli, Florida Supreme Court Justice George Labarga, and Lieutenant Governor Cantera is there as well. Dozens of special guests are awaiting the governor to approach the podium there to deliver his State of the State address. I'm Carson Cooper with USF political science professor Susan McManus. Water policy. We talked about this a moment ago. Lawmakers have already pretty much agreed on this. This water policy package pushed by Speaker Crisafulli, it sets water flow levels in the state's natural springs. It further manages the Lake Okeechobee region and sets more water supply guidelines. Now, environmentalists are not in love with this. They say it's too weak and lacks good enforcement provisions.
Right, and it doesn't address the Everglades enough. But the environmentalists are still stinging from the use of Amendment 1 funds from the last session, where they did not feel that enough was being spent on protecting lands and purchasing lands. And water has, up till now, really been very localized, as we've mentioned a bit earlier. The thing about this sort of compromise proposal is that it reaches all parts of the state. And let's not forget also, agriculture is a huge part of Florida's economy. Our waterways are. Floridians, I mean, our whole state is attractive because of water, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And you see Commissioner of Agriculture Adam Putnam, many speculating as a potential gubernatorial candidate 2 years from now, as really pushing water from the perspective of agriculture. So there's not a part of our economy that's not touched by water. And whether it's tourism, agriculture, standard quality of life, it is a huge issue. And all that Floridians have to do is look at problems that the western states are having with water, and they get it.
Health care was pretty much what caused the last session to crash and burn. That's not really likely this time around, mainly because There's no talk of expanding Medicaid. That was it seems like that was the big issue last year that they could not come together on. Florida State economist Amy Baker, though, says in spite of higher expected revenue, the cost of health care is going up, especially the cost of new special drugs for Medicaid patients.
Hepatitis C, cystic fibrosis, other things. And they're extremely costly medications. And so those pharmaceutical costs are a very significant player.
And Baker says Medicaid will take up more than one-third of Florida's budget in the coming fiscal year. I can recall not long ago when it was a quarter and even less than that. So
it's the biggest cost increase item in just about every state's budget, including Florida's. And it's an issue that I assure you, even though it may not be fractious in the legislature, it's one that will be carried onto the campaign trail in a partisan fashion. Democrats will keep saying, well, why didn't you take this money? That was wasteful of you not to do it. Republicans will say, well, it would no guarantee that the federal money was going to still be there, which, of course, it's now being weaned off of that a bit. But Medicaid is just a huge cost item. Almost in some states, the growth in Medicaid exceeds that in any educational expenses.
And the problem this year, too, is federal funding for hospitals that take care of uninsured patients. That's dropping from $1 billion to just over $600 million this year. Do these rising costs pave the way for things like expanding the role of nurse practitioners?
Well, there's talk about expanding the role of nurse practitioners and others in writing prescriptions. But the whole healthcare industry, and of course that's Scott's background, but he's certainly been after the hospitals for wanting them to have to post the prices of things, and the hospitals are resisting for various reasons, legal and privacy and other kinds of reasons. But healthcare is also going to be a huge part of the presidential contest because of the fact that even people who are receiving Obamacare, their health costs are escalating instead of decreasing. And Republicans will make hay of that, and Democrats will try to defend it as to more people are covered. So that issue, probably more than the other ones we've talked about, shows the intertwining between national presidential election and state election issues that'll be on the campaign trail.
You're listening to live coverage of Governor Scott's State of the State Address on WUSF 89.7 to kick off the 2016 Florida legislative session as we wait the governor to deliver his address. I'm Carson Cooper, joined by USF political science professor Susan McManus, and we are inviting you to weigh in via Twitter. We are at WUSF. Don Keith tweets, "Major education issue is that substitute teachers are paid less than babysitters and only requires an AA degree, associate's degree."
It's a huge issue, and we've had several instances this last year of where schools almost couldn't be in operation because they didn't even have enough substitute teachers. There's got to be more incentives, and with all of the problems that we're having now with being so careful about who comes on to college, to educational campuses, mm-hmm. particularly K through 12, there's got to be more monitoring of it. It's a tricky issue, but it also speaks to the bigger issue. How do you get more graduates to go into the field of teaching? It's a huge challenge.
A priority for Senate President Andy Gardner is increasing education and employment opportunities for Floridians with disabilities. Venice Republican Nancy Dietert added a measure that would encourage Florida businesses and the state workers to hire disabled residents.
Yes, and as the population ages, disabilities are going to not just mean the younger persons within the workforce, but older ones as well. Dietert is sort of probably the best known, most respected moderate Republican in the legislature who, like Arthenia, seems to get things through that are controversial from a partisan perspective, but for making her party look sensitive on some issues that is helpful to them in the long run.
I'm seeing Governor Scott make his way through the crowd there in the House chamber. Sarasota Republican Greg Stube wants to allow those with concealed weapons permits to carry on state college campuses and university campuses. The Gates family, as we mentioned a moment ago, Matt and Father Don are behind the effort to allow open carry in Florida. Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri hates the idea.
The opposition is to creating an environment that is not safe for Florida, not good for families, not family friendly, not good for tourism, and not good for our economy.
The younger Gates argues that violent crime is 23% lower in open carry states such as Louisiana, Colorado, and Arizona.
The claims that open carry will lead to wild, wild west and an explosion of crime and a return to the Miami Vice days of the 80s and back to Dodge City, I think those are perhaps a bit more hyperbole and a little less grounded in the actual facts before us.
Now, some in law enforcement are sort of like, you know, waiting to see how this might play out. They want more details. How do you check somebody's license? I mean, when you're getting a haircut, you see the license there in the mirror, but what do? Just walk up to somebody and ask them if they've got that permit to carry?
It's a huge question mark. The implementation of laws is always the most difficult, and it's never over. When you pass a law, that's just stage one, and then it goes to the implementation, which again gives opponents another entry point to contest legislation. It's an issue that the public is definitely worried about. The USF Nielsen poll showed a huge percentage of Floridians against concealed weapons on campus. But in my own class discussions, I've had very heated discussions, and it's quite interesting that even a Democratic lawmaker, a female, is in favor of it because she was a victim of rape when she was a student. So it's really creating some very different kinds of proponents and opponents than we normally see with gun issues.
Mm-hmm. Now, it looks like the governor is almost ready to begin his State of the State address. Just while I've got you here, Dr. McManus, indulge me briefly in some presidential politics here. Governor Scott has said he would not endorse anyone until after the March primary in Florida. But he, to me anyway, he pretty much did so in an editorial published in USA Today last week. You see that, where he says Donald Trump, quote, is capturing the frustration of many Americans. After 7 years of President Obama's very intentional government takeover of the U.S. economy, and he sort of compared himself to Trump, recalling how in 2010 the political pundits blew Scott off as this unknown outsider. What do you think about that?
Well, it's also perceived that it might be him running for the Senate in a few years.
Well, right now, sorry for the interruption. Governor Scott appears ready to deliver the 2016 State of the State address. Let's go live to Tallahassee.
Good morning, Speaker Cristofoli, President Gardner, and members of the Florida Legislature. Welcome, Lieutenant Governor Carlos Lopez Quintero. I'd also like to welcome Attorney General Pam Bondi. Chief Financial Officer Jeff Atwater. Commissioner of Agriculture Adam Putnam. Chief Justice LaBarga, and members of the Florida Supreme Court. I would also like to recognize my amazing wife, Ann. She's the love of my life. She's my best friend. We have been blessed. We have two wonderful daughters, and we have four very energetic grandsons. And this year, we'll celebrate our 44th wedding anniversary. Today marks my 262nd week in office as the governor of the great state of Florida. And I've had a lot of time to reflect over the past 5 years. Judging by earthly standards, Ann and I have had a good bit of success in our lives. But as I reflect on that, I realize that our time on earth is fleeting. and I'm unable to do anything of lasting significance without the grace of God. I know that our work that is eternal is the time we spend investing in other people. Our families for sure, but we also do work of lasting significance when we invest in lives of our friends and our neighbors. I ran for governor to help my neighbors, all 20 million of them across our great state. There are some who believe that the best way to help people is for government to give them money. The truth is, for those in dire need, we need to provide a safety net. With your help, we have invested Florida taxpayer dollars to make a lasting difference in the lives of Florida families. For the first time ever, we completely funded the critical needs waiting list for those, for persons with unique abilities, so they can help, get the help they need. We've made a record high investment in our education system so every child can have the opportunity to pursue their American dream. And just this year, we started a pilot program to better serve individuals who suffer with substance abuse and mental illness. These are two issues that affected my family and affect families all across our state. But government assistance must be the very last resort, not the first. Government does not create prosperity, and it never has. Top-down mandates from big government are artificial and not sustainable. Real prosperity is created by the ingenuity and the hard work of the American people. The people of Florida have proven that when they are unfettered by the artificial constraints of government, they are the ones who create real and genuine prosperity for their families. Prosperity that is created naturally, not from the top down, but from the bottom up. Floridians want the opportunity to live their dreams. Therefore, I believe that the best way to help the weakest, the poorest, the most disadvantaged, to live their dreams is to get them a job. A job is the number one way to change any person's life for the better. And today I'm proud to report that the great state of Florida is, in one word, growing. Thanks to the hardworking people of our great state, over 1 million jobs have been created in just 5 years since I took office. One million jobs. Now that's something every Floridian can brag about. 1 million jobs. One of those amazing job creators from our state, who is growing jobs from our state from the bottom up, is with us today. Please help me welcome the founder and CEO of Gladiator Lacrosse, Rachel Zeitz from Boca Raton. Rachel is just 15 years old, and she started her company when she was 13. Like any, yeah, that's impressive. Like any competitive athlete, Rachel said she wanted to practice lacrosse as much as possible. But she found the quality of her gear just wasn't holding up. Every few months, she was purchasing more equipment, and she said it was getting expensive. So Rachel decided to do something about it, and she created her own line of lacrosse gear to meet her standards. Between school, homework, and lacrosse practice, Rachel now runs an online company which had over $1 million in revenues in just 2 years. Now, even more impressive, this young small business owner now has 3 employees who help her out while she's in class. So, Rachel, thanks for making Florida first for jobs. I know you're just starting your success. Congratulations. While I'm pleased to report to you today that the Grace of Florida is growing, I must confess that our work has just begun. Now we face the mighty task of keeping job creation going strong. Now, we must set our sights higher to make sure we don't fall back. Now we must be dedicated to making Florida not second to Texas, but first in the nation for job growth for years to come. Our goals are mighty, our challenges clear. We have 2 objectives. First, we must keep doing what's worked the last 5 years to help Floridians get a job and live their dreams. And keep cutting taxes. Second, we must diversify our economy and help small businesses grow by creating a new $250 million Florida Enterprise Fund. Which has already been endorsed by mayors and city leaders all across our state. With record state revenues, we have the opportunity to diversify our economy and help our small businesses grow by cutting taxes by $1 billion. I've never heard of a business person that wanted to grow a smaller business. If we put more money in their pockets, they're going to spend it on research, new equipment, and hiring to create more jobs. And I started a first business in Kansas City. I was 22 years old, and I had just gotten off of active duty with the U.S. Navy. We took our entire life savings of $3,500, and we opened up a donut shop so my mom could have a job. It's hard work to start a business. It's risky. It's scary. I can still remember it like it was like yesterday. That's why I'm asking for your support this legislative session for our First for Jobs $1 billion tax cut package to cut the cost for manufacturers, innovators, and entrepreneurs in our state who take the risk to make our economy grow and create good paying jobs. A tax cut package of $1 billion may seem like a high number. Let me put a face to this effort by introducing you to Dane Gray. Dane, please stand. Dane is the CEO of Elite Parking Services in Jacksonville. In college, Dane began a valet parking service to make extra money. Little did he know that his dorm room business would turn into a company with 360 employees and locations all across the country before he turned 30 years old. Dane City now plans to add around 100 new Florida employees over the next year. Our First for Jobs tax cut package will cut the commercial lease tax Dane pays today and help him keep more money to reinvest in the company he worked so hard to create. Dane, thank you for working hard to make Florida first for jobs in the nation. I also want to introduce you to Isaac Lidsky, CEO of ODC Construction in Orlando. Isaac is blind, but his degenerative eye disease never stopped him from accomplishing his dreams. He graduated from Harvard Law School and was the first blind U.S. Supreme Court law clerk. It gets better. His entrepreneurial spirit brought him to the great state of Florida in 2011 when he took a chance and used his family's life savings to buy ODC Construction. ODC built more than 2,000 homes in Florida last year and employs more than 300 men and women. And I'm excited to announce that they built a brand new headquarters in Orlando and will be cutting the ribbon on it very soon. Pretty impressive. For the past 4 years, ODC has had commercial leases on their buildings in Orlando and Tampa, which has cost them over $14,000 a year in taxes. And Isaac's here today in support of reducing the commercial lease tax on businesses to make it easier for entrepreneurs like him in Florida to start and grow business and create more jobs. Thank you, Isaac. We know that the commercial lease tax unfairly targets both small and large businesses all across our state. And under the First for Jobs tax cut package, we will begin the fight to do away with this unfair tax. Now, cutting taxes alone will not be enough to diversify our economy and allow Florida to become first for jobs. That's why we're asking for your support to reform our business incentive process at Enterprise Florida to create the new Florida Enterprise Fund. The creation of this new $250 million dedicated trust fund will help us diversify Florida's economy, support our small businesses, and become the number one place in the world for families to get a good paying job. Please help me welcome just a few of the mayors who have supported our proposal to create the new $250 million Florida Enterprise Fund who are with us today. First, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry. Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer. Tampa Mayor Bob Buckhorn. Fort Myers Mayor Randy Henderson. Apalachicola Mayor Van Johnson. A little bit further back. And Pensacola Mayor Ashton Hayward. Thank each of you for your support and all the jobs you've created. Enterprise Florida has helped many businesses move and expand in Florida to create good-paying Florida jobs. But today, I want to share just one story with you. Last year, I met with First Choice Aerospace on a trade mission to Kentucky. While I was there, we announced that First Choice Aerospace had chosen to expand in Miramar instead of their home state of Kentucky, which resulted in 45 new Florida jobs. First Choice Aerospace picked Florida over Kentucky because of our talented workforce, our low taxes, and our strong presence in the aviation industry. Because we temporarily ended the sales tax on manufacturing machinery and equipment, First Choice Aerospace has been able to save money and reinvest it into their business. And that's why we must permanently end the sales tax on manufacturing machinery and equipment this year. If not, it will effectively be a tax increase on small businesses like First Choice Aerospace. We want First Choice Aerospace to keep growing and hiring more employees like David Tablada, who's here with us today. David was the first employee First Choice Aerospace hired when they expanded in Miramar. David moved to Florida when he was 8 years old from Nicaragua so his father could pursue a career in aviation. David worked hard to follow in his father's footsteps and attended the George T. Baker Aviation Technical College in Miami to get the skills he needed to get a good paying job. David said he's thankful to work at First Choice Aerospace because he can provide for his wife, Anya, and his son, Sebastian. David said his job at First Choice Aerospace is allowing him to live his American dream in Florida and also enables him to give back to his community. As a former law enforcement officer, David is working hard to become a volunteer reserve police officer in Miami Beach. David, thanks for being here and thanks for helping Florida for jobs. Many of you know that my favorite three topics are jobs, jobs, and more jobs. But I want to switch gears today before I conclude. In thinking about the eternal significance of our 20 million neighbors all across our state, I have been increasingly focused on their safety over the past few months. The hate-filled, cold-blooded events of recent months make it clear that we live in a fallen world, where terror sometimes reigns and evil seems unbridled. We've seen people at a concert ruthlessly murdered in Paris, healthcare workers massacred in San Bernardino, and a Floridian, Stephen Sotloff, beheaded at the hands of ISIS just a few months before. No one can dispute that ISIS is evil. Our next president must make it their mission to immediately eliminate the threat of ISIS to the United States of America. As a proud U.S. Navy veteran, I found it even more important over the last few months to stop and honor those who serve to keep our nation safe from harm, at home and abroad. One of those service members is here with us today. Please help me welcome Captain Brian McDowell. Active Guard Reserve member of the Florida National Guard, who is currently serving in the 3rd Battalion of the 20th Special Forces Group out of Camp Blanding. He began his military career in 2000 and has been deployed multiple times in support of Operation Enduring Freedom and Iraqi Freedom. While deployed to Afghanistan in 2004, Brian received the Purple Heart. After sustaining significant shrapnel and burn injuries to his entire body from an IED explosion, after spending 6 months in the hospital overcoming life-threatening injuries, he fought hard to be able to return to work with his fellow guardsmen. I'd like to welcome Captain McDowell and his wife, Anna, who's also an active Guard Reserve member of the Florida National Guard, here today. As we honor Captain McDowell and his wife, Anna, will every active service member, every veteran, and every first responder in the chamber today please stand so we can thank you for your service. In closing, let me say again what I will say all across the state on my bus tour that starts tomorrow. The state of Florida is, in one word, growing. Together, we have completely turned our economy around, and more families are thriving here today than 5 years ago. Florida recently surpassed 20 million residents. And we're adding more than 1,000 new residents per day, growing faster than California and New York. Florida has added more than 1 million jobs. But we cannot let up. Our $1 billion tax cut package and the creation of the Florida Enterprise Fund will be key elements to make Florida first for jobs in the nation for years to come. Let's work together to diversify our economy, help our weakest, our poorest, and our most disadvantaged live their dreams and get a job, even when times are tough across the nation. Let's work together to cut taxes, help families working hard to live their dream in Florida. Let's work together to help every small business owner who's risking their life savings to succeed here in Florida. Let's work together to support the next young entrepreneur like Rachel, Dane, and Isaac, building the next great idea right here in Florida. Let's work together to make sure Florida continues to have a world-class education system. Let's keep working together to make a lasting legacy on lives all across our state. Let's make Florida first for jobs together. God bless every one of you, and God bless the great state of Florida. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, there you have it. Florida Governor Rick Scott delivering his 2016 State of the State Address live from Tallahassee to kick off the 2016 Florida legislative session here on WUSF 89.7. I'm Carson Cooper here in Tampa along with USF political science professor Dr. Susan McManus. And we are awaiting the Democratic responses any minute now. In fact, let's go now to Tampa Senator Arthenia Joyner.
Each and every one of you listening today, a happy new year. 2016 will be an important year, not only for the issues here in Florida, but to decide who will lead us as a nation, whether we want to continue the course that rescued our country from the brink of economic disaster, or return to those days of despair that still hold some in their grip. Because even as our country has moved forward and the economy as a whole has made great strides, here in Florida, the future is not as bright, the outlook not as hopeful, and the despair is still real. Since his first campaign to win our state's highest office, Governor Scott has never quite understood that running state government is very different than running a big hospital corporation like he once did. He's never quite gotten the message that the obligations of a public servant to the people are not the same as a corporate CEO to his board members and stock analysts. Yet here we are, 6 years later, and Governor Scott still views the people of Florida for what they can do for him rather than what he can do for them. We heard today more promises and more assurances that he's producing the jobs he said he would, ridding us of too many business over regulations and over taxation, and restoring the American dream. But is he? If you live in Scott world, his Florida mansions and yachts and private jets, yes, he most certainly has. If you happen to be on his hand-picked list of business winners, the ones he favors with your tax dollars for all their tax breaks, then yes, you've got the best governor money can buy. But if you are like most of us, you're still waiting for your turn to get on that winner's list, that opportunity to finally catch a break. And it's been a long wait, because the state of the state we have today is the story of two Floridas. In Governor Scott's Florida, all is good. He reminds us every time he jets to a new corporate opening, your tax dollars paid for. And every time he issues a press release slamming the president for his actions to help the struggle of the many over the self-interest of a few. But that's not the Florida I see. The Florida I see is a state yearning for the freedom that comes from self-reliance. The kind of self-reliance that comes from a good job that pays you fairly for the work you do and rewards you for the success of the company that you help build. But all those thousands of new jobs Governor Scott likes to take credit for aren't doing that. Most of the ones your tax dollars funded are low paying with few or no benefits. The kind that used to go to teenagers but now are filled with adults trying to care for themselves and their families. And so the Florida that I see is a state filled with hardworking but frustrated people. The ones working two, sometimes three jobs and stretching their dollars to the limit. The people who are finding it harder and harder to stay in the houses they bought, pay for the rising property insurance they can't control, or send their kids to college without burying them in debt. And the Florida that I see is a state where some officials see health care as a hand out, not a hand up, where the tax dollars Floridians paid are sent to other states to pay for other people's medical care. because the governor keeps blocking Medicaid expansion and the chance to make our tax dollars work for us here at home. The governor's partially right when he says Floridians want government to get out of the way. They don't want government using their tax money to reward companies creating low-paying jobs, restricting their voice at the polls, eroding their rights to a good education, stripping environmental protections, slashing the safety net for abused children, the elderly, and the mentally ill, overruling their decisions over their own bodies, or removing their access to fair justice in the courtroom. But the people do want a government that isn't afraid to step in when the playing field has tilted to the privileged, or stands up for the principle that everyone should pay their fair share. The people want their government to ensure clean water and clean air, and respects their vote to preserve the land for future generations. The people want a government that invests money in research and development, encouraging the discovery of new innovations stamped made in Florida to revive the flag and manufacturing sector. The people want a governor that values the thousands of public servants who work tirelessly to make this state run, and the critical services that attract good companies and good jobs. And the people want a governor who reflects the diversity of the population and the appointments he makes, and acknowledges the millions of Floridians who have embraced Obamacare by opening the door for the hundreds of thousands who remain uninsured. It's ironic that despite all his railings against our government, Governor Scott, too, relied on it for help. As a child, government helped shelter him in public housing. The GI Bill helped pay for his college and legal education. Government gave him the leg up to get to where he stands now. But it is that same leg up that remains missing from his agenda today. He's fond of helping his Florida, but he'd rather forget the other one. He's still asking for more of your money to attract his business favorites. He's still trying to cut the tax bill for special interests while hitting Floridians with higher property taxes. And he's now advertising that he wants to diversify our economy by passing around a box of donuts on TV. Governor, to make this state work for everyone, we need more than just a box of donuts. As this legislative session begins, I ask you to join me as Democrats continue to represent the people of the Florida and the state we all know and love. Join me as we raise our voices to preserve our environment, safeguard our children, our seniors, and the least among us who turn to us for help. Join me as we seek to improve public education and expand real job opportunities, improve wages, reform a broken criminal justice system, and recognize our state employees who devote each and every day to serving the people of this great state. For the sake of today, tomorrow, and the future to come, let's do this together. Thank you.
And now, House Minority Leader Mark Pafford.
I'm Mark Pafford, and I'm the Democrats' leader here in your House. It's our honor to represent 6 million Floridians in our districts across the state and the 20 million people throughout Florida as legislators. Governor Scott just shared his vision for you. He's taking us in the wrong direction. Consider this. People are as important as corporations. Public schools are more important than politics. And our environment is definitely more important than the special interests. Your success, freedom, and prosperity improves Florida's economy and your own quality of life. Democrats want to be careful with your hard-earned tax money and fair. He wants a billion-dollar tax cut, but it's a political stunt, not leadership. Evel Knievel would be proud, but Evel Knievel also broke a lot of bones along the way. His trickle-down corporate welfare plan makes you pay about $400 million extra in property taxes this year to pay for that corporate welfare. Hard-working homeowners shouldn't be writing checks to executives at already profiting corporations. Hard-working Floridians should have the freedom, the liberty, to spend their dollars the way they choose. And if they want to purchase products from these corporations, it should be from the bottom up. There isn't a trickle coming the other way around. As former President Bush rightly declared, it's voodoo economics. It doesn't work. He also wants to use a special bank account for his own economic priorities. He wants to dictate which corporations get $250 million of your money. That's crazy talk, considering the unmet needs of Floridians. Now, there is no surplus of money. We can close the health care coverage gap for working people. He's lost billions of your tax dollars by allowing them to be spent in other states. He's turned his back on you and the creation of high-paying healthcare jobs. It would have been great for Florida's economy and saved you higher tax rates. One more thing here. You've already paid for those billions in federal dollars now being squandered by his lack of leadership. He is denying you the use of your dollars that you already paid for. You were already taxed on them. Public schools are in desperate need. Public education is about our future. It is the foundation of Florida's prosperity. Florida's families need public schools that work for our future, not high-stakes exams. We need real accountability, not rigged numbers. Your government should spend more money in the classroom. Your government should stop diverting big money to big private corporations. Your government should respect families, students, and teachers. It appears to many that this governor wants to purposely shift public school funding to create a publicly funded private school system fueled by your public tax dollars. More corporate welfare? And by the way, my message to those parents that are opting out of these high-stakes tests, it's really courageous. It's civil disobedience. And the song, and as former House Leader Dan Gelber said, freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. On a personal note, I applaud what you're doing and for you taking that bold stand. People come to Florida because it's one of the most beautiful and unique places on earth. We've got to protect Florida. A huge majority of you instructed your government in 2014 to put your tax dollars to work, conserving and protecting Florida. Florida's governor refuses to do it again. The people have asked their government to protect our springs. The people have asked their government to save the Everglades. We should spend our money to stop pollution before it happens. We should spend our money to fix what's already polluted. Democrats want to follow through on what you demanded of your government. Unfortunately, as we've seen time and time again, this bunch of current leaders spends your money and your time in court defending unconstitutional laws that they pass. House Democrats will continue making you our priority in a system that is overrun by campaign cash. Yes, it is frustrating. Human decency is important, as is compassion and empathy. When did that change? Here's my free advice to you. Whether you agree with me or not, get out and vote. Democrats and Republicans need your help. It is the key to getting your government back. Government isn't the bad guy. If you see the government as the bad guy, you're voting against yourself. because as President Lincoln said, government is of the people, by the people, and for the people. Thank you for the honor of representing you. Let's head in the right direction. Together. We need you now.
There's House Minority Leader from West Palm Beach, Representative Mark Pafford, and Tampa Senator Arthenia Joyner, the Senate Minority Leader, with the Democratic response to Governor Scott's 2016 State of the State Address here on WUSF 89.7. I'm Carson Cooper in Tampa, along with USF Political Science Professor Dr. Susan McManus. In our few minutes remaining, reaction?
Very much as expected. The governor's speech was something that's very much in sync with Republican ideals, smaller government, lower taxes, diversify the economy, continued growth, highlighting the successful entrepreneurship of Floridians and challenging the legislature to keep it going.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing, the State of the State address, Governor Scott kicked it off. I would say the theme was pass my $1 billion tax package, and while you're at it, pass my $1 billion tax passage. Package. He really hit that hard.
Jobs, jobs, jobs is one of the things that's kept him out of a lot of trouble with Floridians who really don't particularly like him too much personally, but they do like the fact that he has at least created a better environment for business. At least that's the perspective of some people. Others totally disagree. Their Democratic response, just the opposite. Yep. Arthenia Joyner saying there's two Floridas. There's the governor's Florida and there's our Florida, the Democrats. Absolutely. The two of them side by side reflected exactly the differences on policies that are going to be a key part on the campaign trail this year.
And I'm picking up overtures from some Republicans that it's the tax cuts aren't really what's working. They say Governor Scott is creating jobs and businesses are coming to Florida, but it's not so much the tax cuts. It's the deregulation of how you operate in Florida.
Right. And he didn't talk much about that, but he did talk about getting rid of some taxes that are, he, in his perspective, keeping down people from forming new businesses. And that's why I think he emphasizes his guests, some young entrepreneurs, people starting out businesses, emphasizing small business, because that ties to some of the regulatory environment arguments.
USF political science professor Susan McManus, thank you so much for joining us today. 2016, a presidential election year. I don't think you'll be too busy this year, but I do hope you'll join us in the coming weeks and months.
Thank you. As always say, great to be a political scientist in Florida and not North Dakota.
Right. This wraps up our Florida Matters special report, Governor Rick Scott's State of the State Address, to kick off the 2016 Florida legislative session. We will hear more about this year's session during Florida Matters this afternoon at 6:30. 60 days of lawmaking to go, and you can stay on top of the session during Morning Edition, during All Things Considered, Florida Matters, and on our website, WUSFnews.org. Our producer is Lottie Watts, engineer Craig George. Thanks also to Dale Goodwin. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Also, thanks to our listeners who joined us on Twitter. Our handle is at WUSF. This is WUSF 89.7 Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, news and information with All Night Jazz. Sorry about that second hour of the Diane Rehm Show. You can join Diane Rehm again tomorrow morning at 10. We now join Fresh Air with Terry Gross in progress with her special guest today, Ray Liotta, on WUSF 89.7 News, Information, and All Night Jazz.